for so much of Saturday, during the Kansas City Chiefs playoff game, throughout its entirety, afterwards, for quite a while, I think the word that best described me was speechless. And that's a rare word for me. And now here on the Roughing the Kicker podcast, I, Joshua Briscoe, will be doing the opposite of being speechless. I'm going to talk for pretty much as long as I feel like it's hard not to whenever the Kansas City Chiefs break a 22-year-long playoff drought. The drought is over. The waters of a playoff victory have hit the sand. And I am so ready to talk about it. I can say for the first time in my life, hey, I just saw the Chiefs win a playoff game. Let's have a conversation about that, you and me. Programming note, I'll talk about the Patriots some other time, and I can't wait for that show, but it's going to have to wait because right now it is just the celebration show, getting to celebrate the Chiefs winning a playoff game for the first time in over 20 years, in case it had been two whole minutes since someone had reminded you of that stat. Last week I ended the show talking about the cynicism that I think so many Chiefs fans feel, or maybe now felt, but that I certainly felt. The Chiefs felt snake-bitten, if you're looking at them from a playoff perspective. And that cynic in me didn't die when the Chiefs were up by 20 points, by 30 points, as the game even ended. Because there was a sour taste in my mouth, on some level, guessing what people were going to say. So don't turn the show off yet if you didn't want to have to deal with a little bit of cynicism, because I'm going to argue it away right now, to the best of my ability. And I'll break down the game drive by drive after this, but I want to say this first, because I think this is very important to think about and to realize and to be able to say to other people. Brian Hoyer played terrible football. The Texans couldn't do anything offensively. Their defense ultimately crumbled. But beating this team, this Houston Texans team, this badly is at least partially a testament to the Chiefs' defense. Clowning the Texans like that does not at all lessen how good a playoff victory is. And do not let anyone else tell you otherwise. It is a playoff victory. The problem I had at the end of this game, after getting away from that, was I felt sick. Sick to my stomach for Jeremy Maclin. He left the game with an apparent knee injury. We found out since then that it is a high ankle sprain, not an ACL tear, which I think everyone universally expected after seeing him start to cry on the sidelines. But trying to live back in that moment when we thought it was his knee, and even now, Maclin probably won't, I would say he won't play against the Patriots, and if the Chiefs continue to advance to the playoffs, I think he'll be a huge question mark throughout it. But we'll get to that on the next show. But back in that moment, as the final seconds ticked off, I wrote this and I put it on the Facebook, facebook.com/RTK show, on Twitter, twitter.com/JB Briscoe, trying to get the emotions together for what this whole experience was like. The Kansas City Chiefs won a playoff game in my lifetime for the first time, and it was a strangely complicated feeling, and it still is. The Texans are bad. But they looked extra bad because the Chiefs clowned them so ferociously. This was a whipping. Plus, the Patriots and the Bills beat the Texans by less. The Bengals had their first loss of the year against Houston. This was not a blowover team. And if you think it was, try to go watch some of the pregame stuff. Anything talking about J.J. Watt, I'll talk about J.J. Watt in a little bit also. But the loss of Jeremy Maclin, at this point, my fear was the ACL. Everyone's was. And even now, probably a playoff loss of Jeremy Maclin. But the loss of Jeremy Maclin made it hard to feel like just totally openly celebrating. It hinders, the loss of Maclin hinders a Chiefs offense that needed him so badly. Plus, it sucked to watch him go down. Such a likable player, such a good part of this team in his first year as a Chief. That was a miserable scene. And somehow, somewhere in there, I still feel like this team has farther to go. And now we know it's not going to be in Denver, not this week. It's going to be in New England. But wherever the game is, the opposing offense is going to struggle to score points. And the Chiefs' offense might struggle to score points too. But the Chiefs just won a playoff game. And that's amazing. And it does not have to stop there. And if you want to get real weird, let's think about our expectations for this team and how much they've changed and where they are now. What if the Chiefs lost after this? What if this victory that we're celebrating right now, what if this is it? Is this a good season, a bad season? Where were we? What would we have said in the preseason? What would we have said after week 6? What would we have said after week 17? In the preseason, I had the Chiefs being a fringe playoff team and probably grabbing one playoff game. So currently, we never would have picked this path of 1-5 and then 11-0. But that's essentially, that was the expectation. 30-year of Andy Reid and John Dorsey, a playoff win was the expectation. After 6 weeks, if you would have said, "Hey, they're going to make the playoffs," I would have hit you with a football pillow, and then ignored you, and then I would have been thrilled with that result, knowing it at the time. Then the Chiefs go on and win 10 straight games, and they get the Houston Texans. Well, boy, if they would have lost to the Texans, the season would have been a disappointment again. Not a low draft pick or high draft pick kind of disappointment, but a look at how close they were again. And they blew it. They had a great chance against a Texans team that is not a high-caliber team. A good team, not a great team. Oh, they blew it. They didn't. They won. They got rid of those Chiefs demons that so many of us, I think, have to deal with and have been trying to talk away with reason and logic for how this game is going to play out. Well, it worked. It happened. We all thought the Chiefs were the better team. We all saw reason the Chiefs should have won that game, and they did, and it happened. But now what? Because the Chiefs did what they needed to do. Andy Reid and John Dorsey needed to win a playoff game. And then, of course, I was talking about the draft after week 6. The expectations completely changed. My expectations might have been they're going to fire some coaches. But then you get right up to Houston. Well, if they would have lost that first game, it's a huge disappointment. They win it. How do you feel? And you can always, like I said, you can tweet me at JB Briscoe on Twitter, facebook.com/RTK show. What are your expectations? What were they for the team? And then how does it make you feel right now? Because I feel pretty darn good about the Chiefs getting that playoff victory finally. But I would still be disappointed in a totally different way if it were to end after one chalked up victory. Because this team has shown me enough. Enough to believe that they can beat the Patriots or the Broncos or the Steelers. I don't know about the NFC teams. I haven't even gotten that far. But that's one thing that we saw in this game against the Texans. Not only is this right now a celebration of the drought ending, of a victory, and a victory of a type that we haven't seen in so long. This is hopeful. The Chiefs just lost, I would argue, their most important offensive player other than Alex Smith. Probably for the whole playoffs. And I'm filled with hope about the Chiefs. And that is insane to me. I wouldn't have been able to convince myself that I would be at this point. Weeks ago, last year, the year before. But it happened. The expectations for this team have been constantly evolving all season long. In the preseason, they were one thing. After week 1, they were another. After week 6, they were down to 0. After winning 10 games, they were up all the way, cranked up, because they've got to beat the Texans. Then they get cranked back down again when you think Jeremy Maclin's torn his ACL. Then you hear it's a high ankle sprain, and you start to remember how badly they thwomped the Texans, and then how banged up the Patriots are right now. And that hope meter, that expectation meter, keeps turning up, and I think the Chiefs love that. There was no expectations on them after week 6. I get it. But as this winning streak continued, the pressure kept mounting. And Andy Reid has done an unbelievable job as the head coach of this team. And every player in the locker room, there's not been a single guy who has had like a mental breakdown where there's been something that snapped and you go, "Oh, there we go. Chiefs, this whole run was for nothing. They're going to miss the playoffs or they're going to gag it up in the first round." And that could have cost this team. There were plenty of times whenever a game could have slipped away after one bad play, and this whole season just fades into memory and faint memory as that year where they lost at the beginning and then won at the end and then missed the playoffs. Every NFL team has that capability of one play, one bad series changing the season. And for 11 straight weeks, the Chiefs did not let that happen. I think that's an unbelievable testament to three things. to the players playing and their mindset, to Andy Reid as the head coach of this team and keeping them together, and to John Dorsey for the depth on this team. On the 810 pregame show, Sports Radio 810 here in Kansas City, WHB, I run the board for the pregame show and for some other stuff on the weekends. And Seren Petro and Mark Boerichter were talking about how important depth of a roster is, especially in the playoffs. I think it was Boerichter that said, by this time of the year, you're not playing with your 53-man roster. You're playing with the 35 guys who made it this far. And for the Chiefs, especially the offensive line, where Ja Reed ended up playing right guard in the first playoff game, and LDT got hurt, and Zach Fulton was starting at center, Donald Stevenson got the start at right tackle, that depth changes the entire direction of the season. And that's something that the Patriots have struggled with. It's been good so far, but it's their biggest struggle right now. And John Dorsey knocked it out of the park. Every level of the Chiefs right now should be proud. But none of them should feel done yet. Let's take a look at the anatomy of a playoff victory, something we haven't had to dissect for a while. That's enough body puns for now. Chiefs at Texans. Kansas City Chiefs 30, Houston Texans 0. The Chiefs called for heads on the coin toss. The coin landed tails up. The Houston Texans chose to defer. Nile Davis fielded the kick. Nile Davis brought it out. Nile Davis took it back for the second longest kickoff return in NFL playoff history. A 106-yard kickoff return for a touchdown by Nile Davis. You legitimately, correct me if I'm wrong, could not write a better start for the Kansas City Chiefs. And in retrospect, that could have been their only score in this game. And it outdid the Texans by a full touchdown. 7-0, just an immediate explosion for the Chiefs. And it had been a pretty long while since the Chiefs had had a kickoff return for touchdown. The last one was also Nile Davis. So starting a playoff game that way was fine by me. Then the Chiefs defense gets on the field after just a few seconds and immediately forced a 3-and-out where the Texans picked up a grand total of 4 yards. They punt it back to the Chiefs. Then the offense, for at least a bit, had a flawless stretch. Quick pass to Kelsey, quick pass to Wilson, quick screen to Kelsey. Then Smith kept an option and followed Charkandrick West up the middle on 3rd-and-1 to pick up the first, or to get to 3rd-and-1. And then Spencer Ware spun through the line for the first down. Then a jet sweep to Albert Wilson for 9 yards. West got the first down. And then up through that play, every single snap had been a success on some level. And I was critical of the jet sweeps with Albert Wilson a few weeks ago because I don't think he has the skill sets that D'Anthony Thomas does. 4 plays like that. And those are D'Anthony Thomas plays. Those are why those are in the Chiefs playbook. Or I guess maybe I should say D'Anthony Thomas. Those are the plays that D'Anthony Thomas is made for. Or those are the plays that are made for D'Anthony Thomas. Regardless, Albert Wilson, not ideal, but he executed that one very well. And then establishing that early in the game made the Texans need to respect it as an actual option. So then throughout the rest of the game, there were lots of fake jet sweeps or maybe even options where Wilson just didn't get it. And that was always a threat that had to be sticking in the back of the Texans' mind. Then the Chiefs' offense really stalled, though. Then Smith got pressured from both edges and stepped up into Vince Wilfork. Then Kelsey dropped the second long tight end screen. And I love those so much. I love on a nice second or third and long, just throw the ball behind the line of scrimmage to just really anybody and just sort of, you know, pray that something magical happens that you don't deserve. Love those plays. Then on 3rd-and-13, Smith had time and went deep to Albert Wilson, who was wide open, and the ball went about 2 inches past Wilson's hands. And it was interesting for me looking on Twitter, seeing the mix of Wilson should have dove versus the Smith should have hit him tweets. Either way, it should have been a touchdown. If Smith pulls a little bit off of that, a negligible amount off that ball, it's a touchdown. If Albert Wilson lays out, it's a big gain. Or maybe if Albert Wilson, you know, if he gets off the line just a hair quicker to touchdown. Those are the plays that you miss by just a tiny, tiny bit. And I'm not furious because it shows that those are an option. Although the Chiefs were really hesitant to take other deep shots like that later in the game, which really surprised me. Also, one thing to note, with J.J. Watt as a factor here, and the Chiefs, this is how the Chiefs beat the Texans in Week 1. The Andy Reid game plan was a lot of quick hit kind of stuff. In this case, they actually did stretch the field and should have had a touchdown. But that the receiver on that route, as I just said, was Albert Wilson. Albert Wilson plays the slot. He's not the field stretcher on this team. It's Jeremy Maclin. This was before Jeremy Macklin's injury. But now, without Jeremy Maclin, maybe Albert Wilson gets a little bit more work trying to stretch the field because it looks like Alex Smith and Andy Reid both think he's a viable option because they were doing it whenever Jeremy Maclin was still on the field. Anyway, the Chiefs have to punt, but Brian Hoyer had a really nasty throw, like nasty in a bad way, that future comeback player of the year Eric Berry scooped up for his interception in the playoffs. His story, it's almost beaten to death, but it's still such an incredible thing to wrap your head around. As I said, comeback player of the year in waiting, I would hope, for Eric Berry. He gets the pick, but then back on offense, Smith had a totally clean pocket and threw it to Maclin across the middle. The ball hit Maclin on the back shoulder, popped off his shoulder pads, and landed in the arms of Brian Cushing, so the Houston Texans get an interception and get the ball right back. The Texans' defense is good enough, in my mind, and shown through the season. They were good enough to force big mistakes. That's one of the reasons that they were successful and ended up winning the AFC South. Giving them freebies like that will come back to bite you. At this point, the game could have easily been 21-0 because of the kickoff return, the hypothetical touchdown to Albert Wilson, and then the touchdown on the drive after the pick if the offense would have functioned properly. Instead, it was still 7-0. And at that point, the pessimism wasn't completely gone, wasn't even close to completely gone, about the Chiefs in the playoffs, and they just weren't capitalizing on some of the errors that they forced from the Texans. Then Houston started to string together a little bit on offense. They picked up a first down to Hopkins, got another one on a pass interference call against Marcus Peters going up against DeAndre Hopkins. It was a bad call. I'm not going to scream about refs for 10 minutes, but that call was a bad call in my opinion. And every time the Texans tried to run the ball, though, the Chiefs smothered them, which totally makes sense if you listened to the show last week. The Texans had over 150 rushing yards as a team only 3 times in that win streak, and it was against some 2 really bad run defenses and 1 average one. The Chiefs are the 8th, finished the year, I think it's the 7th or 8th run defense, I think it was 8th, in the NFL. The Chiefs stopping the Texans' run game was not surprising. In fact, I thought it was a key to the game. Ultimately, the Texans had one big run play that made their numbers look a whole lot better than it actually was, but as a team, they ran for 114 yards. 49 of those yards came on one Alfred Blue run that obviously did not turn into points. J.J. Watt had that carry at the goal line, which we'll talk about in a second. Just a wonderful, wonderful play. Anyway, the Texans had something happening there on offense, but then Dee Ford got some violent pressure. Alan Bailey just ran an offensive lineman backwards into the hand of Brian Hoyer as he was trying to throw a pass, and the ball got knocked loose, and Dontari Poe somehow recovered the fumble, like with his back. Fumble, ruled a Chiefs fumble, Chiefs ball, ruled a Texans fumble, Chiefs ball, turning the field around one more time. Then the first play of the drive, Smith scrambled a little bit, threw a high strike to Travis Kelce for 18 yards, and the first quarter ended at 7-0. And I say high strike there because it might have looked like a high pass at first glance, but he put that ball where Kelce needed it to keep it clean and away from the defense. It wasn't in an instance where Kelce could have gotten killed by a linebacker coming across the middle. The ball went where it needed to be. Then on 3rd and 4, a short pass to Kelce didn't quite pick up the first down. He was dragged down by Quentin Demp's blast from the past. And Cairo Santos nails a 49-yard field goal. 10-0 Chiefs. The ball goes back to Houston. The Texans continue to try to run the ball for some reason, and they continued that for most of the game. The reason, I guess, was that Brian Hoyer's their quarterback, but the run game was not happening. Sean Smith got beaten by DeAndre Hopkins for a first down, then Jay Howard whipped his blocker and sacked Brian Hoyer. Texans end up punting, give the ball back to the Chiefs. At this point, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif was out being evaluated for a concussion, so Ja Reed came in at right guard. And I was worried about that at the time because I figured Ja Reed wasn't starting at right tackle because he might not have been completely healthy yet. Donald Stevenson, much to my surprise, got the start at right tackle. Ja Reed had done a very nice job at right tackle for this last section of the season, but he didn't play last week due to injury, so Donald Stevenson started. Well, Stevenson also got the start in Houston on Saturday. I figured that was because Ja Reed was going to be basically a, in case of emergency, break glass on this injured offensive lineman. But Reed came in and played very well. I didn't notice him doing anything through the rest of the game, which is usually how you want your guard to be perceived, as a guy who just disappears amidst a strong offensive line. That's exactly what happened. LDT never came back into the game. Don't know about next week. We'll talk about it next week in a few days. Stevenson locked up on Watt. Spencer Ware helped double-team him, and Smith threw a downfield strike to Travis Kelce for 25 yards. That was a great show of blocking on that play. The Chiefs, though, could not pick up another first down because of a third and short jet sweep, which drives me insane, but I'm going to just move on for a second. Another 49-yard field goal for Santos. Another perfect kick, and then became 13-0 Chiefs. At this point, I had some worry back to the idea of the Chiefs not being able to capitalize on mistakes. You can only force so many punts and turnovers without turning them into points. And 13, obviously in retrospect, 13 feels like a million against Brian Hoyer on that day. But 13 points off of the mistakes that the Texans had made and continued to make was not very encouraging. Then Peters, with the ball back with the Texans, Peters loses to Hopkins again on a really fantastic catch from Hopkins on the sideline. Though the inside of the offensive line seemed to be holding whoever it was that rushed up the middle. I think it was Dontari Poe that got held on that play but did not get the call, as usually the defensive linemen don't get. Then the Texans got their big run play. It was bad tackling. It was well blocked, but bad tackling, and Ron Parker and Justin Houston missed their tackles. That was the 49-yard run for Alfred Blue, and that was the only silver lining for the Texans' run game. Then in the red zone, Steven Nelson locked up DeAndre Hopkins in the corner of the end zone one time as Peters was getting his shoe tied. I did not expect to see Steven Nelson lined up against DeAndre Hopkins in this game for a single breath, but it was a good play. The Texans then get a first down. Then J.J. Watt comes in to play quarterback in the Wildcat along with a blocking Vince Wilfork, and they both get stuffed, which is hilarious, and it was dumb. I don't understand. It was a two-possession game, and the Texans were bringing in their defensive players to try to score because nothing else was working. Then Dontari Poe pushed through and got to take a run at Hoyer. Hoyer cringed back on a pass and got a little bit jumpy, threw it, and Josh Malga jumped in front of Alfred Blue and just in front of the goal line. Interception, returned to the 22-yard line. Fantastic pick by Josh Malga to, at this point, keep the game at two possessions. The Texans were in perfect line to score a touchdown on this drive. Obviously, this preserved the shutout, but at the time, this was important. Going from 13-0 to 13-7, at this point, would have made me plenty nervous on the road in the playoffs. So the Chiefs get the ball back, and then Alex Smith goes down. Fisher got beat by Watt. Kelce got beat by Whitney Mercilus. Mercilus gets his second sack of the day. Then Smith goes deep to Albert Wilson for 22 as Wilson goes out of bounds, but he could not quite hold on to it. It was ruled a catch at the time, but overruled after challenge. So the Chiefs punt the ball right back. But that didn't last very long for the Texans because it was a Brian Hoyer day. After the two-minute warning, Brian Hoyer sails a pass to Nate Washington into double coverage between Marcus Peters and Eric Berry, and it's the future Defensive Rookie of the Year, Marcus Peters, who gets the pick, adds that to his resume. Chiefs get the ball right back. Then on offense, heck of a run by Spencer Ware for 23 yards to give the Chiefs some space, because the Texans had driven down and the pick happened very near the goal line. So the Chiefs get some space to try to make a game of the two-minute drill. I completely agree with the play calling up to that point. You don't want to give Watt and Mercilus a chance to get a strip sack down inside your own 20. See if the run game can make some space, and it worked. Spencer Ware did make some space. Then it was a screen to Albert Wilson, which got 6 yards, and Wilson got out of bounds. Then on third down, they ran a pitch play, a toss to the running back, which I hate. I don't understand. I don't get it. If you're going to run the ball, run it up the middle and pick up your third and short and try to keep the drive going, but nope. Andy Reid loves moving the ball sideways and backwards on third down plays for some reason. And I'm not going to be mad with Andy Reid today. But that made no sense. But the Chiefs punt, Texans take a knee, and leave the field to a chorus of boos for halftime. The Chiefs should have been up by more than 13 points at the half. The 13-0 score was not gaudy enough, and they made up for it in the second. But that was an underwhelming first half from an offensive standpoint, with just 6 points from the offense. Looking back at that deep shot to Albert Wilson, it was Bill Barnwell who tweeted, "The Chiefs have thrown deep once and had a guy open by 2 yards for a touchdown and haven't thrown deep since." This is a little counterintuitive, but I bet we see more deep shots this upcoming week against the Patriots in New England. It's counterintuitive because I think we won't have Jeremy Maclin to get those targets in that game, but I think the Chiefs are going to try to exploit that deep ball a little bit more. Blair Kirkhoff said, "Bad as Hoyer was, the Chiefs have 3 points off 4 Texans turnovers and lead 13-0 at halftime." Bill Simmons chimed in, said, "Good news for Kansas City fans. Andy Reid already ran out of 3rd-and-3 plays. They can only gain 2 yards." And the fun continued at halftime. I tweeted and asked a bunch of you listening, if the Chiefs lose this game, I will, ... And my favorite response is, Grod913 said, "Drink the pain away." Scott Chasen at SChasenKU said, "Probably go back to covering basketball. Need to pick a restaurant for tonight. I'll probably do that too. Then some TV." Scott, you clearly don't care enough. If you're not hanging on every snap, Scott, are you truly breathing? At Beck Blast said, "Blame it on the rain." Ryan Landreth said, "Eat a piece of poop from the litter box." Rick Clemens, maybe, said, "If they lose, I'll finish a bottle of Wild Turkey while watching the Royals World Series highlights." I think that's a very good idea. And then my personal favorite, at Dewey Mike, "Eat a bowl of Rocky Road, sitting in the bathtub, sobbing like I was a 16-year-old girl who just got dumped." Those were all, I enjoyed all of those very much. That one's my favorite. And we did not have to act any of those out because the Chiefs held on and extended their lead in the second half. More than doubled their lead in the second half. But starting the second half with the ball, the Texans turned together several short plays to keep the ball moving, and Sean Smith was incredibly close to having an interception just fall into his hands. Then blew it for 13 and crossed midfield. Then they got to 3rd-and-10, and the Chiefs crushed a screen to DeAndre Hopkins. In my opinion, that's because they're used to seeing 3rd-and-long screens in practice all the time. The Texans punted, Chiefs get the ball back, and Alex Smith has a fantastic 64-yard run after escaping J.J. Watt, but holding on Albert Wilson brought it all the way back, and then some. I'm not convinced it was a hold. That was probably the sketchiest call of the day, from my opinion. Ended up getting a first down with a pass to Charkandrick West for 9 yards, but losing that 64-yard run was really a bummer. After that, J.J. Watt left the field for a little bit with an injury, and Andy Reid, I'm assuming, noting that J.J. Watt was out of the game, drew up a pass, and then Smith scrambled and rolled to his right, hit an open Jeremy Maclin for 16 yards, Macklin's second catch on the day. After that, Smith could not connect with Kelsey. The Chiefs used a timeout. Smith had all day on a pass, threw it too high to Maclin. Maclin went up to go for it, then he hurt his right knee as he was tackled awkwardly. J.J. Watt left on the same play. Maclin was then carted off with the tears on his face, which we all thought meant ACL, ACL, ACL. We find out it's a high ankle sprain, which is good news in place of bad news. On the same play, J.J. Watt left the game, and there were several times where he left and tried to come back, but he hadn't had much of an impact leading up to this point, and this was the straw that broke the camel's back. And in this case, I think it's kind of hilarious that the straw is Eric Fisher. The offensive line, as I already mentioned earlier, had a fantastic game here, holding up, even though they gave up a couple of sacks to Merciless and Watt got some pressure. Considering that the strength of the Texans team is supposedly their pass rush and J.J. Watt, what the Chiefs did here was incredible. And I'm going to go ahead and talk about J.J. Watt for a second now, because there was an update after the game that he had been dealing with an injury for 6 to 7 weeks. Adam Schefter says in Watt's press conference, he said he would have surgery on his groin on Tuesday. Yes, and has been dealing with it for 6 or 7 weeks. Last week, J.J. Watt had a fantastic game. He had been playing very well, even with a cast on one of his hands. So though he was supposedly dealing with an injury for a while, he'd been playing very well in spite of it. And Eric Fisher and even Donald Stevens, wherever J.J. Watt lined up, the offensive line took care of him. In a lot of cases, it was because of good scheming. But Eric Fisher, For all of the criticism that he has garnered, and a lot of it fairly, although I've been on the Eric Fisher bandwagon since this preseason. He had a very nice preseason. I thought that was a sign of things to come. It took about until week six, I guess. The Chiefs haven't lost a game this year with Eric Fisher at left tackle. Not that he's the reason, but he's certainly not hurting it. In this game, he was a huge asset. After those two injuries for Maclin and J.J. Watt, Alex Smith goes to Kelsey, then Spencer Ware for 12. Kelsey for 6, half the distance to the goal on a personal foul penalty by the Texans, where it went for 2, and then Smith hit Conley in the back of the end zone for a big boy NFL touchdown. It was a very nice play, and obviously Chris Conley's first career postseason touchdown. But this offense with Jeremy Maclin didn't get a touchdown in the first 40 minutes. So I don't feel fantastic about it in New England, but the defense played so well. But I'm getting ahead of myself, though I can't blame myself for being ready to talk about the New England game. The Texans get the ball back, go 3-and-out with 2 drops and a great pass breakout from Hussein Abdullah. The game was definitely over at this point, but it continued anyway. Smith Heed went out for Travis Kelce. Kelce went down to get it and took it downfield for a 48-yard gain. Another unnecessary roughness penalty on Houston, half the distance to the goal and a first down. And Spencer Ware lost 2 on first down. Then on the first play of the fourth quarter, ran it in for the touchdown. Spencer Ware, 27-0 Chiefs. It was, at this point, I mean, at 20 points, I was certainly content. Even though it's the Chiefs, the Texans look so bad. But there was still a point. I'll finish the game, I guess. The Texans went on a 51-yard drive, and then a Brian Hoyer sack, which kept the Texans from scoring on fourth down. The Chiefs held the ball for 3.5 minutes. Alex Smith made way too many running plays because it scared me, because he could have gotten hurt, and I got jumpy thinking about next week. And then on Brian Hoyer's first pass with the ball back, it just found its way into Sean Smith's hands. He overthrew a wide-open DeAndre Hopkins. So yet another turnover. The Chiefs end up getting a field goal, 30-0. Steven Nelson and the Chiefs defense made plays, 3-and-out. Houston punt. Chiefs run the clock out with Chase Daniel. Ball game. The playoff drought ends. And, boy, at the time, I felt as if there was a way to feel kind of blasé about ending a, in my case, lifelong playoff winning drought. I think I did. It wasn't disappointing, but it just wasn't, it wasn't unbridled joy because of the uncertainty of Macklin and because the Texans look like a JV playoff team. Again, though, that's partially due to how good the Chiefs defense was. Brian Hoyer was bad, but the reason he looked so bad is because the Chiefs got pressure on him. And Justin Houston and Tom Bahali being on the field at the same time and frequently rotating in Dee Ford, that will make a quarterback look worse than he actually is. You can go back to the Denver game where the Chiefs almost ended Peyton Manning's career, although he's playing again. If the Chiefs don't get pressure on Manning, he's not throwing all those interceptions. We might not have seen Brock Osweiler. Obviously, Manning was hurt, and I don't think that the Chiefs were crazily dependent on a constant pass rush in that game. But if they get this kind of pressure they got against Brian Hoyer, against Tom Brady, we're going to, at the very least, get a fair representation of how good this Chiefs team is. And losing Macklin, again, for the rest of the playoffs is still, if that's the case even, is still very worrisome and a bummer. But it doesn't have the fear, the long-term groan that another ACL tear for Jeremy Macklin would have. That would have been such a downer for a player with such a bright future with the Chiefs. And I'm not looking ahead to next year. That's something I'm too used to doing after the first week in the playoffs. So I hope that this whole recounting of everything that happened, plus the assessment of where the Chiefs are now and why you should be as excited as you can be about this game, helps to change your viewpoint if you started in a place where I did, where I couldn't help but be sad for Macklin while also being a little bit skeptical of the Texans while also trying to be excited about finally seeing a playoff victory. But I also think that speaks to what we expect from the Chiefs. I think if you look at what fans thought about the Kansas City Royals, not this last year, but the year before, everybody was happy to see them winning a playoff game, winning a playoff series. If they would have gotten one series in and then lost, it would have been a successful season. I don't feel that way about the Chiefs. I feel like if they lost to the Patriots, we could look back on this season very fondly and say, this is the year where Alex Smith and the Chiefs defense and no Jamal Charles ended the Chiefs playoff drought, and then they lost to a team who's going to win the AFC, in my opinion, if the Patriots do beat the Chiefs. This season will be looked back on fondly because of the streak at the beginning, the 11-game winning streak. Unless they really gag it up in New England, this is a good season. But I can't help but think they're not capable of doing more. So I think if you're sitting here like I am, feeling a little bit like there's a little bit something missing, don't push that away. Embrace that, because I think the team is doing it also. And we'll look ahead to New England in a few days. I think you have a reason for optimism. A few stats and notes before we wrap up this episode. It'll be a little bit shorter than the last few because it's just on this one game. Brandon Kiley at BK Sports Talk tweeted, "Many will talk about the pressure on Alex Smith this week, but Smith was pressured at a lower percentage than any other starting quarterback in the wild card round," which I think is a very important stat and a great testament, again, to the offensive line while going up against one of the best pass rushes. Of all of the teams, the Denver Broncos might have the best pass rush in football. Maybe. I would take the Chiefs, but that's just me. Of all the active ones, eliminating the Chiefs from the conversation, the Texans would have been widely considered having the best pass rush with Watt and Merciless. So that's a good sign for the Chiefs' offensive line. Not even to mention, again, that Zach Fulton's playing center up against Vince Wilfork. And Fulton in his second start at center in his pro career. Before the game, Ian Rappaport tweeted that the Chiefs signed tight end Demetrius Harris to a 3-year extension worth up to $6.3 million. He was going to be an exclusive rights free agent, would have made the minimum in 2016. One of the advantages the Chiefs have with free agents like that is you can pay them a year early and probably get them for less than they would get on the open market. I still think Demetrius Harris has some very interesting potential. He has a legitimate ceiling as a player that not a lot of players do have. But more often than not, he's the blocking tight end who is the guy you don't want to have to throw to, but you can. In some cases, that touchdown catch last week was fantastic. It's not a huge signing. It's just part of building a football team, so don't overthink it. I tweeted after the game, which of these playoff losses was the worst, trying to ignore your personal rooting interest. 20% of you said Vikings to the Seahawks this weekend. 28% of you said Bengals to Steelers this weekend, and 52% of you said Chiefs to Colts back in 2014. I would say Bengals to Steelers because of how they lost it. I was asking that question as a fan, really, more than as a team or a player. Watching the Bengals lose as a fan would have been unfathomably frustrating because they gave the game away with mental mistakes and stupid errors. The Chiefs lost to the Colts because they got whipped in the second half by a quarterback having a field day and because of poor defense. But, and again, most of my Twitter followers, I think, are Chiefs fans, which I'm happy about. Makes a conversation good. Hopping over to the box score of this game, a few things stand out to me. First of all, we have to look at the quarterback stats because that's just part of the NFL. Alex Smith completes 17 of his 22 passes, 190 yards, touchdown and a pick, sacked three times. Brian Hoyer throws 34 passes, completes just 15 for 136 yards, four interceptions. He had a QBR of 1.7. That's out of 100. And the rushing game, this surprised me. I would not have predicted this. In some ways, it's because the Chiefs needed to put the game away at the end, and Spencer Ware did that. But Spencer Ware led the team in carries and yards by quite a large margin. 16 carries for 67 yards. Also had the longest rush for the Chiefs, a 23-yard long. Charkandrick West had less rushing yards than Alex Smith did, only 8 for 26. His longest run was a 6-yard gain. I'd like to see both of them get more work in New England whenever that comes around, because I think it's going to be important to fill up the offense without Jeremy Maclin. But that was not the case here in Houston. The Chiefs got a lead early, and then you can trust Spencer Ware to put the game away, in my opinion. Travis Kelce has two 100-yard or better games this year. Both of them came against the Houston Texans, 8 for 128 in this game, his longest one being 48 yards, 10 targets. Again, next week, I can't help but look ahead a little bit. Gronkowski and Travis Kelce will be the best offensive weapons for each of their teams, respectively. So, Tom Brady and Gronkowski versus Alex Smith and Travis Kelce, I'll take the Patriots side of that. The rest of the offense is going to have to make up a little bit of ground. Marcus Peters, mostly Marcus Peters, some Sean Smith, and a little bit of Steven Nelson held DeAndre Hopkins to only 6 receptions for 69 yards. His longest play was 17. He got 11 targets, and only picked up 69 yards. Part of that's quarterback play. Hopkins made some fantastic acrobatic plays, but that is a huge victory for the Chiefs defense on a player-by-player basis. That Chris Conley catch, by the way, for the touchdown was his only catch of the day. Defensively, again, J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt, sometimes the coverage of him drives me a little bit insane, and I don't know why. It's not like he doesn't deserve the praise that he gets. He's a fantastic player, but I don't want to hear now about the injury that he's been dealing with. Not that it's not legitimate, but because he's been playing so well anyway, no one had breathed the phrase, well, J.J. Watt's looked slower the last few weeks. He had one of his best games of the season in Week 17. And in this game, the entire offensive line and the blocking schemes did a fantastic job. The biggest credit goes to Eric Fisher. But J.J. Watt, for the defense, you have to scroll down to find his stats. He had one tackle. J.J. Watt had one tackle, no sacks, no tackles for loss, according to the box score on ESPN.com. That's Alfred Blue and DeAndre Hopkins and Nate Washington had as many tackles against the Kansas City Chiefs in this game. Those guys all play offense, by the way. Jeremy Maclin was standing, fielding some punts in pregame warm-up, but he obviously ended up getting injured late in the game, and it wasn't needed that explosively. But Frankie Hammond ended up returning every one of the punts, four returns for a total of 34 yards. I missed Anthony Thomas so bad for punt returns. Although, on the other side of the special teams, for the kick returns, the only kick return the Chiefs had was the opening one, which obviously went back for the touchdown from Niall Davis. I just think it's funny. I don't think I've ever seen... I can't think of a time when I've seen the opening kickoff go for a score and then a team win that game in a shutout. That might have never happened. I'm not sure. Kairos Santos nails all three of his field goals, which I already talked about. And Dustin Colquitt, he punts four times for a total of 181 yards. Three of the four land inside of the 20. The special teams, I think, get undervalued a lot of times, except for in cases of big explosive plays like Niall Davis' touchdown. Winning the field position game is hugely important, and again, in New England, it's going to become even more important. Everything's going to become more important in New England. Alfred Blue, by the way, 17 carries for 99 yards. I think I would have bet my house that the Texans would not have had a 100-yard rusher, and I would have been right by just a few inches, probably. One last thing before we get to the end of this show. This show is brought to you by you through the magic of Patreon.com. Patreon.com/RTK, that's Patreon.com/RTK, is where you can sign up to help support the show financially. It repeats on a monthly basis. You can throw $5, $10, $20. If you want to do an actual sponsorship of a show for a product or service, tweet me and we'll figure it out. But I never want to have to charge everyone to listen to this show, and right now I certainly don't have to, especially thanks to these people from Patreon. The $20 group is Don Beal at DonBeal32, Andy Simpson, Stephen Smith, Derek Vaughn at DVaughn88, and then the $10 group, Christine Roadlander at CRoadlander on Twitter, Ty Declare at TyDeclare44, and the $5 group, Josh Beadle and Ben Rahman. These people keep the show free, keep it easy for me to keep it free for everybody else, covers the hosting costs that I have, all of the little things, and then occasionally bigger things, like this beautiful new microphone that makes me feel like a real professional. Now I have a pop cover, so I probably pop the peas less. The other couple things you can do to help really help the show is to subscribe on iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to the Roughing the Kicker feed on iTunes or your Android app, wherever you subscribe to podcasts. Because the AA Radio one has been having some trouble lately, and I would hate for anyone to miss this show during the playoffs who's been listening all along. So look for the Roughing the Kicker Facebook or Roughing the Kicker iTunes page or feed or subscription, whatever, and subscribe to that one. Never miss an episode. If you have friends, family, or just Twitter followers who you think would like this show, Chiefs fans who want to get to relive the playoff victory in podcast form, I'd be thrilled for you to share the show in any way that you see fit. And then, as always, you can get in touch with me for questions, ideas, suggestions at facebook.com/RTKshow or on Twitter, I'm JB Briscoe. It finally happened. We are all witnesses. The Chiefs end their playoff drought after over 20 years. The first time in my lifetime, I feel like a pretty special baby right now. The Chiefs ended that drought in dramatic, dominant fashion. Not dramatic like, oh no, this game was on the line, but as in, hope you are sitting down for the opening kickoff, otherwise you missed the explosion of this game. I'm Joshua Briscoe, this is Roughing the Kicker on ArrowheadAddict.com, Arrowhead Addict Radio, iTunes, Google it. We'll find that. You can always find the show. You can always get other people to find the show. This was just the celebration. Next will be the preview for Chiefs and New England Patriots. That'll probably come on Wednesday or Thursday. The shows show up on iTunes before they show up on Arrowhead Addict. So don't forget to subscribe and make sure you don't miss it. And I am ready to talk about why the Chiefs are going to beat Tom Brady and the Patriots. And I almost believe it.
Excuse me,
bye,
sir,
Mom.
But could you drop the bag?
Bye, 22 years of losing. Bye, sadness.